Today, prepare your countdown. We are still going through our list of the 9 controversies that shaped, that shook, that defined the 90s. The 90s was an incredible decade. It's the decade that gave us Nirvana. It's the decade that gave us Spice Girls. It's the decade that gave us Friends. It also gave us, right there at the end, right at the tail end, it gave us The Matrix. What a crazy decade. Comics was no slouch in that department either. Every big event caused a stir of controversy, and we are back at it covering all of them. We continue our countdown of the 9 controversies that shaped the 90s on an all-new episode of Robservations. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Robservations. I am your host, Rob Liefeld. Robservations is a podcast that discusses comic books and superheroes in all forms and formats. I should learn to say it that simply and that concisely, but literally that is what we do here. I have been on a 50-year journey with comic books as a passion, as a love, as a fan. Was hired at 18 years old and began my career, which is almost at a completed 40-year mark, but it is 39 calendar years that I have been working in this business, but 50 years pulling these comics off the spinner racks, chasing them in comic book stores, mailing away for them. The reason I stammered there for a minute, because it still affects me. The first few comics I mailed away for, I did not get. And then the next round of comics that I mailed away for, one of which was Godzilla number 1, from Marvel Comics in 1977, early 78, it came folded. It came literally folded in a bag with a giant crease. And I was like, what is going on here? Like, this was worse condition than I received them from when I pulled them off the spinner rack, which I've talked to you guys before. The spinner racks, these books were manhandled. They were mangled. People, kids came in, they looked at them, they put them back. Some people, while their dad was in getting all the tequila at the liquor store, which I've covered, on Broadway and Magnolia in Orange County, Southern California. That had the by far the best selection. They valued comics. It was those slots on the spinner rack were thick. They were just thick with comics, some from months and months. They didn't send them back. They didn't return them. They just kept piling on, and so you could go back months and look for issues of Fantastic Four or Hulk, or yes, the Champions, as I've covered on a dedicated podcast to a team that you've probably never heard of, but was one of my favorites. Those books were bent. They were creased. Some of them were torn. Some of the covers were barely hanging on, but hey, they still cost 20 cents, 25 cents, 30 cents, whatever was the price of the day. I've covered how they kept going up a nickel pretty much my entire childhood. The 20 cents to 25 and the 25 to 30, to me, were the longest, maybe a couple years, and then boom, it was a nickel. 30, 35, 40, 45. 50 cents, then 60, and there was no looking back. That's what we do here. That's what we discuss. Comic books and superheroes have become so important to the entire fabric of the pop culture that we live in, that is part of our everyday. You go to the big box stores, you go to Walmart, you go to Target, you go to Best Buy. I mean, there's superhero something somewhere everywhere. Plush toys, action figures, the DVDs, the cup holders. I mean, yes, there are superhero cup holders. You know it. Thermoses, lunch supplies. It's just overwhelming. Again, the apparel, whether it's backpacks, hockey jerseys, T-shirts, this stuff is everywhere all the time. It has expanded in a way that the little kid, 7 years old in 1974, never saw coming. Never, ever. Like, it's just incredible. So I have just been eating this stuff up. Eating this stuff up. And as 1974 turns to 2024, that is where you get that giant 50 mark. And it has been a blast. And today we are continuing our coverage of the 9 controversies that shaped the 90s. Eras are absolutely shaped by big events in some instances. And I think we're going to talk about at least one of them today, dynasties. If you're not watching the Patriots documentary that spans the entirety of like Tom Brady's 19, 20 year career with the New England Patriots, it's on Apple. It's fantastic. As a Rams fan, I learned to hate Tom Brady and the Patriots early and often, but there is no denying they had their impact. And there is the thing that is the most interesting that people don't understand is that there was a 10-year gap between their, you know, almost 11-year gap between their wins, between their, you know, Super Bowls. They had gone to two in between, but they lost both times to the New York Giants and Eli Manning, who, by the way, that documentary does dirty that they don't talk to anybody but Michael Strahan. Come on. Like you couldn't talk to, I mean, the Giants just had Brady and Belichick's number during that time, but the dynasty and the way that they influenced comics, that's an era. That is an era that stretches from 2000 all the way through, you know, 2020. It's incredible the impact that one team had on the entire sport, a sport that actually grew and expanded and became even more popular during that time. So under that same microscope, again, the Showtime era, I grew up here in Southern California. Magic Johnson, drafted by the Lakers, took over the Lakers. It changed LA. It changed the look of LA, the songs of LA. I mean, you got, you know, Randy Newman's I Love LA largely on the back of the popularity of the Showtime Lakers, who are, you know, that song then became an anthem after every game played from the 80s on. To this day, they play it when they win. And it just put a different spotlight on Southern California, because they then became the most winning product Southern California had. And in the prospect during that time, in that window, the byproduct was that they changed the NBA. The Showtime Lakers changed the NBA. They never looked back. The entire assemblage of that team, and then the next decade was about who can build a team that can beat them consistently. They thought it was the Celtics. It wasn't. The Celtics really came up short head to head in those meetings. They had that one great year that they dominated, but the era, I mean, you're talking, and again, the Kobe Shaq era in the early 2000s. Kobe Bryant went to seven finals in between 2000 and 2010. Okay. And he won five of them. Seven finals, he won five of them. It's incredible. That is staggering. He also changed sports. They changed the rules in the NBA to better equip other teams to defend Shaquille O'Neal. The zone was not something that was played in the NBA until post Lakers 2000 championship implemented. Shaq was really pissed off about it and was very open, saying they did this because of me. Those kind of moves are in every industry. Of course, Star Wars changed the movie industry. I mean, radically. How many Friends knockoffs occurred once Friends became a giant, massive runaway success? People thought it was easier to knock that off than it was to knock off, let's say, Seinfeld. Well, in comic books in the 90s, we had big, giant events. And all of those events carried a controversy. They carried a boatload of opinion, and in some cases, a boatload of vitriol towards each and every move. But each of these resulted in something spectacular. I truly believe that. We covered on the, we counted down on the first part of this show. We counted down the first five. I'm going to reference maybe one of those early on, but you got to go back and you got to see what 9, 8, 7, 6, and 5 were for yourself. Okay. You got we got so much to cover here today. I got to put the pedal straight to the metal and get right into it. And look, we're going to start with number four. The number four biggest controversy of the 90s, number four on our list of the nine controversies that shaped the 90s, is the image partners split, the fracturing of the image partners. Two were formal, one was informal, and just understand as I share all this with you, yes, part of this is because I was involved in some of these controversies that I'm sharing with you, that I have such clarity and I have so many documents that I can share. But you know, as we move this, and there will be a format like this for the 80s and the 70s, I'll be there telling you firsthand how I encountered it as a fan. So one way or the other, man, I'm telling you about stuff that I was there for, which I got to be honest, again, somebody else was trying to tell me about Giants as X-Men, challenged me about Giants as X-Men number one the other day, which came out in 1975, which I was there for, okay? I pulled that comic book off the rack that transformed my love for the X-Men. It worked, it clicked. The mission that they set out to accomplish was complete, at least from my end. Don't try and tell me in 2000 how that book impacted when you weren't even a gleam in somebody's eye at that point. Okay, you were 20 years away from being born. Don't come at me when you were born in 1998 and try and tell me born in 1998 how Giants as X-Men impacted. You're not going to have anywhere near the life experience or the history that book carries. But so often right now, and you got to be aware, I'm going to say this again and again and again and again and again. There are people out there trying to shape your opinion on things, and they weren't there. They were not there in any shape or form. I'm going to tell you, man, there's a lot of people, World War II, the Holocaust, these things are coming under a lot of scrutiny. I've spoken to, in 1990, I sat with a survivors, plural, of the Holocaust, okay? I have had the great joy and pleasure of speaking to World War II veterans, one of which was Mr. Jack Kirby himself, but many more to follow. And when you can hear it straight from the mouths of the people who are there, it matters a little more. It should, because their experiences are of the moment. They are in it. They didn't hear about it. They lived it. And so the Image Partners split, severing. That's myself, Jim Lee. Those are the official ones. We covered Jim slightly, and there's not a whole lot more to do because it was part of why Jim was selling, and Jim is on the previous list. Jim Lee selling to DC Comics was a giant deal. And again, you know, if you're asking yourself, what's the hang up with the 90s? Well, as Deadpool and Wolverine, the third Deadpool movie is coming out in July, and then Venom is coming out shortly thereafter, and then the Joker sequel with Harley Quinn, as I said in the first part, those are three monster, maybe the three biggest in order, characters of the 90s. The 90s are impacting you in 2024 right now. The amount of merchandising, the amount of movie tickets you're going to buy, just the marketing, the comic books, they are going to be at an all-time high. The 90s is maybe more relevant now than it's ever been. So that's why we're covering this. Jim Lee selling to DC Comics changed the trajectory of DC Comics and Jim Lee. Jim Lee's been there ever since. He is a long-standing employee, one of the last people standing from that time, I'd imagine. Very few, maybe not even, because there's people who were there before him who left in the last couple of years. So, I mean, it's down to maybe one hand's worth of people you can count who have been there as long as Jim. Jim changed the industry by selling to DC Comics. A year and a half prior to that, I had been moving my books out of Image Comics. I had wisely, early on in Image Comics, created a secondary label called Maximum Press. Maximum Press is where you got books like Evangeline and Battlestar Galactica and War Child, a ton of books that I'm really proud of. I wanted a different label for my licensing and genre pursuits. And of course, that was also packaged alongside my other Image comic books like Brigade and Bloodstrike, Youngblood, Supreme, Prophet, Glory. But there was a time where after all the fun, after the party of Image Comics, which was a good, fun, I'd say about a good three solid years of good times. But around late 1994 and early 1995, everything started to sour, and it was because of competition. I'll say ruthless competition. And much of what kind of ignited it, and I've covered it in multiple episodes from year one. What just made this podcast explode, because I was there in real time four summers ago, when to close the summer out, I decided to finally share with you all the facts, the details, and literally facts, F-A-X, and facts, F-A-C-T-S, with you, because to this day people go, why are you showing us this? When I show people like a memo that I show on my social media, and it says attention Bob Harris, they're like, why is this attention on a sketch you mailed in? I'm like, no, this is a fax. This is how they knew when they came off the fax machine. A fax machine was a state-of-the-art state-of-the-art technology in 1990. Whatever you, and people still use them today, but now mostly it's scanning and emailing. And you can scan it with your camera, I mean, with your phone. But back then it was, I could take a memo or a drawing and feed it through my fax machine and New York would get it at the exact same time on their end. Jim Lee and I were the ones who convinced Marvel to get their own fax machine so that we could send in our stories, our plots, our layouts, our everything. We could shave time off the schedule, and shaving time was the most essential aspect of what we were doing. But I shared the facts and the faxes in those Heroes Reborn episodes because built into that is the explosion, what's happening in Image Comics at the time. And we'll cover more of it later on in the list. But when we left Image to form Image Comics, it became clear shortly thereafter we had different agendas why we left. I've always maintained, and I'll re-hit this button shortly, I left Image Comics to expand my creativity and to own more of what I was creating. I had completely bought into the fact that I could create new pillars of the X-Men office, and I threw everything I had in order to create new pillars of the X-Men office, and I had succeeded right out the gate with Cable, with Deadpool, with Domino, with Strife, and I was going to get a percentage of those for the rest of my life. That's how the contracts read. That's how the agreements read. When you hear me on social media, when you read to me, when you hear me read to you, excuse me, that I sold something to Marvel, that's what I did. I did sell it because people go, well, hey, there's this character named Cougar here. And it actually appeared in Marvel Age. And I'm like, oh, it did more than that. I actually drew a cover of Cougar in the New Mutants, but I recanted at the last minute. I did not end up selling that character to Marvel. You have to sign an agreement selling that character individually, every character. I did that. I saw how much success I had with that because I basically repopulated X-Force with all new characters, transforming it. I'm sorry, New Mutants with all new characters, transforming it to X-Force. And in doing so, created this giant success that I don't think anybody, much less myself or Marvel, was prepared for. I figured, well, the next round of dozens of characters that I introduced, I should probably take that into an independent marketplace where I control those characters and I can control their futures and I can better exploit them. And if I want to make action figures and video games, I can do that myself. So it was a natural extension of what I had started at Marvel. Some guys, it came out very early, they were angry at Marvel. They were angry. They didn't say thank you enough. They didn't give me enough. They didn't give me a watch. Famously, one of my partners said, they didn't give me a watch. You know, when you leave a factory after X amount of years with X amount of success, they'll call you up and they'll give you a watch, he said. They didn't give him a watch. So some people had, maybe honestly, it was just all drama because so much is theater in this business. As I've gotten older, I learn just how much theater is being applied to everything to juice up maybe a connection with the fans, to make oneself look more like a victim. When I left, I wasn't a victim. Man, I was riding high. I was like, I'm going to continue this, but I'm going to do this now on with more of my own input. But the people who were mad at Marvel were the most resentful when Jim and I had been approached in very, very early in 1995 to reboot the Avengers, Captain America, Fantastic Four, and Iron Man. And we'll get more to that later, but that immediately caused tremendous resentment. Some people wanted into the deal. They weren't allowed. Some people cautioned that we shouldn't be doing this deal at all. We are empowering our competitor. I didn't see Marvel as a competitor. I'm a fan of Marvel Comics. At that time, when I say yes, I'm buying Marvel Comics. I'm buying as many Marvel Comics as I am Image Comics, even though I get Image Comics for free, okay? I am still a giant Marvel Comics fan. So being able to take a shot, do these characters that I love so much, Captain America and the Avengers, why not? That'd be great. Jim, Fantastic Four, Iron Man. So we set forth on that deal. The summer of 1995, that convention season, every convention I was at, we were already well on our way to being a part of this relaunch. We knew, and Marvel knew on their end, but nobody could say anything. It wasn't made public until there was a press conference in early 1996 telling you it was going to come out that fall with Heroes Reborn. But that does factor into so much of the resentment that was happening. Well, I had built this extra label, Maximum Press, so that I could, if things went south with Image and I didn't like the scolding and the berating and this kind of new shift in dynamics within the label, that I could just escape. And so I'm going to read to you this letter. Now, this all goes down and goes public, leaving Image Comics. I'm going to tell you exactly when. I'm going to grab the magazine because this grabbed the headlines. Because you're like, Liefeld, you're so self-indulgent. No, the Jim Lee leaves Image and the Rob Liefeld leave Image. The reason it's number four is because it was on so many magazine covers, so many newspaper covers, so many newsletters. It was the talk of the town. These absolutely, if we're going to talk about events that shaped and shook the 90s, these are them. So many of the magazines, I'm looking at them right now, Wizard, Fan, Hero, Liefeld leaves Image, Liefeld leaves Image, Liefeld leaves Image on the cover. The emergency extra editorial review as I'm leaving, Rob Liefeld leaves Image Comics. Here's the funny part. Later on, two of my ex-partners said to me, said, you know, you won. You got the headlines. You said Rob Liefeld leaves Image Comics. I'm like, man, that's not what it's about. My former partners, they made it a fight. That's just a fact. They made it a fight. They made it personal. They were mad. It happens. You get over yourself and life moves on. Now, the issue that you're reading this in is the December 1996 issue of Fan Magazine. This probably got to you mid-October because that's when the news broke. But when you get your catalog, because here's the thing, we're just going to do the timelines once again because this is fun, then we're going to move on. Because it happened, there's no going back. But the timelines, don't ever forget the timelines. You can't escape the timelines. So often people think, oh, hey, this preview magazine, you guys get them. Many of you still, because I'll learn from you online, you'll get the previews even to this day in 2024 and share with me something that I didn't know was already being solicited, maybe something of myself or something that I'm interested in, and you'll show and you go, hey, Life, look at this. Like maybe it's a $6 million man product. It's being something that everyone knows I dig. And it's being solicited in the new catalog. I don't have the new catalog. You do. You bought it. The retailers buy them for you to buy them. And they buy them in pretty good numbers because they know people are reliant because people go home with those catalogs and they pour over them. And I used to 30 years ago. It just became overwhelming for me. And I just don't have the time. And I just no longer do it. But so many still do. Well, that magazine just didn't blink into existence. The contents of that catalog were handed in 3 months prior. Then it was collated. It was designed because, again, those catalogs are like freaking phone books. A designer is putting together each and every page. What do you think? They just every company just sends in their solicitations for each book with all their images and blink. Again, a page appears. No, this is a small crew because nobody has an overwhelming crew to do this, but a small but dedicated crew starts and they start in advance by 3 months. So something that you are ordering in September, you were hearing about in 1996 in June. I have a new product coming up with Marvel in August. Those solicitations have to go in this week. Right now, I had to approve solicitations for August in 2024 in March of 2024. Okay, my new last Deadpool book is coming out. It's launching in August from Marvel Comics. You are going to see it in the August catalog. They are preparing to put that into the August catalog today. And this is, as I record this, March 9th. Okay, so that's how far in advance this stuff happened. Knowing that I was leaving Image Comics, I handed in July, my solicitations that found Youngblood and Prophet and Glory and Supreme, my big heavy hitters at Image Comics, are now being solicited at Maximum Press, my label of the last 2 years that had published my number one book. Evangeline was my number one book that I was publishing at that time above anything at Maximum Press or Image. At Extreme Studios, I was writing, producing Evangeline. It was our top-selling book. It was extremely popular. The Maximum Press label was well-known within the industry. And so I was moving my other books just to get a freshen up and to begin the migration because I was leaving. And what happened is when those solicitations arrived to get prepared for the August of 1996 catalog. It wasn't late July, I'm sorry. It was late June. I handed those in to the Image Comics office. That's where you handed in all your solicitation. That was then sent to Diamond for in July. It was sent in July, handed in June, accepted in July for what was going to be the August, on sale in August 1996 catalog. And I have a memo written to me from one on that I've shared with you. I've shared this picture from August 6, 1996, because this is when the shit hit the fan. It is addressed to Rob Liefeld. It has Extreme Studios address on 2048 North State College Boulevard. Dear Rob, on behalf of the board, of which I was part of the board, so on behalf of the board that I'm part of, but it says, on behalf of the board, I am passing on the following information. Because you have pulled the Extreme titles from Image Comics, November solicitations. So this is the books that are coming out in November, and I handed this material in June. It's now reached Diamond, so this is now being sent to me in the first week of August. And you have gone, he continues, on behalf of the board, I'm just going to read it over. On behalf of the board, I'm passing on the following information. Because you pulled the Extreme titles from Image Comics November solicitations and were unwilling to go on record and to state whether this is a permanent measure, we have unanimously decided to reassign the gem and cover of the November previews catalog to books from other studios. If you have any other questions about this, I urge you to contact me or any other members of the board. Sincerely, Todd McFarlane, president. It's got his signature on it. And it has Image Comics. It's on Image Comics stationery. I have shared a picture that I have, because this is a piece of history. I did not recant. I said, this is a permanent move. I am leaving. At which point, they said, you can't leave. They even told my attorney, Rob can't leave. He cannot have that headline. Hence the resentment over, you got that headline. It wasn't about a headline. It was me moving on. Image Comics was no longer a friendly clubhouse. And I was, I mean, good God, people, I haven't even turned 30. I'm 29 when this is going down, but I am deciding that we talk about mental health all the time. We talk about mental health. My mental health was worn down between everything going on, between the resentment that I had experienced for the last 18 months of agreeing to be part of this Heroes Reborn and the beration that we took. A fan asked Jim and I at San Diego Comic-Con while we were on an Image panel, and Todd very angrily rebuked that fan. Said, this isn't the place. There's a Marvel panel later. You can ask Marvel questions later. This is about Image Comics. No more questions about anything Marvel. But Rob and Jim will be happy to announce that we all had microphones. He immediately knee-jerked. I can't imagine what it was like to be that fan, to get that rebuke. It was hostile. And Jim and I went like, whew, there's some heat in the kitchen. So I moved my books out. And that got everybody that upset everybody. And when I refused to go along with any of the convincing that they tried to get me to stay, they said, we are going to formally vote you out. And I said, go for it, do it. And they spent the last part of, you know, they at that time, they spent the better part of a decade trying to convince people that somehow Bad Robbie got caught with his cookie in his hands in the cookie jar, when in fact, it was just a business decision. It wasn't personal. Maximum Press was working for me. What happened after this, I saw the need to get more help and found it in a couple different partners and launched a new label called Awesome Comics, which is its own brand of drama. But through it all, and I made very public that some of my characters, the characters that I created in order to control their destinies, I did control their destinies. I ultimately ended up selling them. And I still have so many great characters, so many great valuable titles, and each character is a character that I love. You may have not seen Dooms 4 recently, but I love them, and I think about them constantly. And just only now, with some of my latest comic book work, am I returning to characters like that who I've always loved, but just haven't been able to bring back to the forefront. But I moved my books out. Image decided to make it legal. It got ugly. Ultimately, I've recounted the story in other podcasts, how Jim met with me, had proxy, was given the ability to make a unanimous decision for everyone and settled all the matters, and no one else knew. But I was told that later that afternoon that happened because Jim had to clear any lawsuits, any legal entanglements so that he could be free and clear to sell his company, which he was already in the process of doing when we met. It's so much drama. It's so much fun. I left, never looked back. In 2005, they said, hey, would you publish your books here again? And I said, sure, I'd love to. No animosity, no hard feelings. But during that time, the anger came exclusively from the image side of things, but it had been ugly for a long time. The unofficial was when Mark Silvestri, over the course of 1 week, got up, left Wildstorm. Jim found out after Mark left, he had secured office space in Los Angeles, and this was the birth of Top Cow. So many of the young talent Mark had hired and was tutoring when he was down at Wildstorm, because Mark joined Wildstorm just as Image launched. He was down in San Diego before they moved to the La Jolla offices, and Mark had Dave Finch. He had Brandon Peterson working alongside him, and he was producing a bunch of work. But at some point, things became competitive, and there was a level of, disconnect in terms of communication and in terms of authority and power and influence, that Mark decided it was time to make a break, and he did, and he created Top Cow. And that summer, I remember very distinctly that summer afterwards, that early on, Mark and his Top Cow affiliates and employees and his girlfriend at the time, I know that they had a shirt and they had a hat and it says, "There is no udder." Like, and it had a cow's udder. It was hilarious. Great. I loved it. So anyway, that is our number four, covered in so much more detail, but I just wanted to read that time again, give you that time, August 6, 1996, because you have moved these books and will not go on record as if it's permanent. We are not going to give you the special spotlight accorded. When he said the gem of the month in the cover, they'll speak for themselves. Gem of the month was like a special. It told retailers, "This is special. We as a publisher think you should have this." They pulled that for me. That was the beginning of the hand slap that would eventually become the lawsuits and the disentanglements. And you can't have that headline. It was never about headlines. But ultimately, over the course of 2.5 years, Jim Lee and Rob Liefeld left Image Comics. It transformed the business. It absolutely had an adverse effect in some ways, because post-Rob, post-Jim, and Larry Marder recently, I need to add this, in a Comics Journal interview, talked about having lost basically the 40 books, 20 from me and 20 from Jim on a small day. Mostly it was 22. I mean, any way you cut it, 40, 44 titles between us. That was a significant blow to the financial picture of the company, and they had to replace it. And for the longest period, Image kind of went into a dark period where all manner of the partners questioned the content of the books that they were pushing. But Larry said, "I've got to make my overhead. I've got to sign books." So a lot of books that you don't necessarily or wouldn't necessarily associate with, I think, the greatness of Image Comics, were suddenly being put out in a large quantity, and that was in order to bridge the gap before they got to what the new golden age was, which would be the Brian Bendis, the Robert Kirkman, all those new books that were coming out. So it was an interesting period. It absolutely impacted, shake, and shook the comics industry. But number three shook it even more. Number three is where we give DC Comics and Superman all of their flowers. We need to give them all of their flowers. And when we launched Image Comics in 1992, we broke the system. I'm going to be repeating that shortly in another number, because as we get into this top three, Death of Superman is the number three, is number three on the controversies that shook, shaped, and really influenced all that was to follow in comic books in the 90s. Sometimes desperation can yield to greatness. When your back is up against the wall and nothing that has been working, and you decide to just rip all the band-aids off and or jump out of the plane, pull the ripper, it can yield spectacular results. And in this case, Death of Superman yielded spectacular results. When we formed Image Comics, when we left, we broke the system. What do you mean, Liefeld? What do you mean you broke the system? We broke the system of purchasing in the comic book world. The bubble didn't get bigger. Maybe a little more interest and money came in, because I've had it described to me by the people who were there at the time. That, in fact, Image expanded the amount of air in the balloon by somebody said, "Take this balloon. You know, Rob," he said, "Rob, you know this balloon? See how you've blown as much into it, and if it doesn't, any more air in this very full balloon will pop it. But sometimes you get a side, let's call it a wart. Let's call it a side bubble that grows on the side. That's what they compared Image Comics to, the side wart, the side bubble. An extra room appeared. And that has been described by people at the distributor, at the retail level, of how it felt, because things were about to pop. A lot of the gimmicks were running low. When we left to form Image Comics, and again, I'm going to refer to this in a minute, but this definitely kind of speaks to what was going on and how Death of Superman figured into everything. Jim had the 5 covers on X-Men number 1. Todd had the 4 covers. I had the 5 covers. Trading cards. The gimmicks, as they call them, the enhancements were coming fast and furious. Gold foil, embossment. And they were even doing a brand new Luke Cage Power Man number 1. I believe it was just called Cage, because I was asked to, and I came across some of the designs. They asked me to design some character designs for Cage. And I can share those with you guys on social media, because I was like, oh my gosh, here they are. Occasionally, not just Cage, but Wolverine too. In the middle of the John Buscema Wolverine run, they put out feelers to not only myself, but I know Todd McFarlane. We were both asked to submit if we were to design a new Wolverine costume, what would it look like? In the same case, we did the same thing with Cage. So I remember this very distinctly. And they launched Cage number 1 with an acetate, like an animated cell cover. And they expected that, it's such a high bar. It's such a new technology of cover enhancement that hadn't been done ever or in a long time, that they felt that would get the giant sales. It didn't. I've always said, really, it went 3 million Spider-Man, 5 million X-Force, 8 million X-Men, and for years they didn't sell a million. Okay, it just, no matter what the gimmick, no matter what the enhancement, the stuff just could not, I mean, even if you kissed a million, you weren't getting near the Todd and the Rob and the Jim numbers, okay? So the technology, the enhancements were kind of flatlining at that time. There would be a new wave of them, like how I discovered thermal ink, but that's because they had literally just discovered thermal ink. So a new wave of enhancements would be coming a couple years down the line. But at this point, the animated cell, this kind of stuff, this way to juice the sales, that stuff was semi-falling short, but Marvel was still strong throughout. X-Men, Spider-Man books were the top sellers, and there was just absolutely no stopping them. But that kind of practice of all the Marvel books selling so well was because they had an army of people who bought them, and they called them the Marvel Zombies, because they would only buy. It was a term phrased by the marketing department, who said, "Our Marvel Zombies, they'll literally." You know, when you're a zombie and you're wandering around, you'll eat the bark off a tree. You know, you're just looking for anything you bump into, you'll consume. They felt that Marvel fans would buy anything with a Marvel on it. So the Marvel Zombie, sales up, sales down, slight fluctuation, it didn't matter. We didn't take money from them. We took money from DC Comics, we being Image Comics. The remaining dollars, because the Marvel Zombie, they said, would not, for the most part, they had a study that they had done with retailers and distributors. And I mean, it literally, guys, sometimes it was 2 to 3 to 1 on a Marvel comic versus a DC comic. But the average Marvel fan only bought Marvel comics. And then their leftover money, whatever they bought, maybe they bought a Batman book, maybe they bought a DC comic, maybe they bought a Dark Horse comic at the time. All of that money got rerouted towards Image. And maybe some of the Marvel money, but not to the point that it made a dent in their overall picture. The company that we crippled, that we kneecapped, was DC Comics, because as I've told you guys, and it's as TLC likes to say, it's factual and actual. Okay, we became the number 2 comic company with only months and 7 comics. We were only in business for a few months and with 7 comics. This was the giant fire alarm. DC was already getting kneecapped in regards to Image Comics soaking up new sales. Valiant was out there certainly competing with them as well. But DC had to do something. They had to do anything. I have a dedicated podcast that gives you the entire lowdown, but they met, they huddled. What can we do to stop these guys? We can never be embarrassed and be the number 2 company, number 3 company again. Image is now number 2. What if they expand? What if they do even better? And they dreamed up the death of Superman, a giant event. They're just not killing him. There's a road up to killing him. And I'm going to tell you, it was masterfully executed. Everybody involved in that, performed at the highest level. When I go back and I read those books, I am still as caught up in it in the moment as I was back then. From a chapter in the Justice League to the Adventures of Superman, Superman, Man of Steel, the new breakout books, it was riveting. The death of Superman, 1,000%, shook the comic book industry. It was something that nobody actually saw as being as successful as it was. It was one of those exciting things where the day it came out, the news got it. Good Morning America, The Today Show, CNN, MSNBC, CBS, every news outlet, every newspaper, DC kills Superman. They, you know, held to the right minute to where they wanted to get a wide swath of interest in people walking in, demanding where it was, and people being overwhelmed, like, oh crap, I don't have enough of these. DC was ready. They had polybagged issues. They had normal issues, you know, but the minute the polybagged issues sell out, that's all anybody wants. It was an incredible success in terms of supply and demand. And but certain versions sold out immediately. But DC made sure, even overshipping some to certain retailers, because they were like, you're going to need these. And they did. Superman, Death of Superman was recorded at the time. I have seen fudges since, and I'm calling them fudges, and Marvel calls them fudges. They have definitely moved the needle. At the time, it sold 3 million copies, less than Amazing Spider-Man. But in the years since, they're talking that they sold 6 million. And I'm like, okay, that is not consistent with how history has been recorded. A couple of people have said, great, the wiki page has been edited. Trust me, I have observed the process of editing Wikipedia. And if you watch the 60 Minutes that was out about a year and a half ago with them at the Wikipedia offices, you will see firsthand and close up, everybody has little tribes. It's a very small amount of people, and there are definitely fiefdoms and kingdoms within. And whoever has edited that to place it a lot higher at the time, the reported sales, and it was enormous. Because come on, Superman was in the hundreds of thousands. Suddenly it's 3 million copies when the Death of Superman ships. And this thing goes bonkers crazy because, and whether you were in LA, Chicago, New York, Texas, it didn't matter. By the middle of the day, the news had reached that some people, casual people who had given up on comics or never encountered them at all, let's say stockbroker Bill, let's say lawyer Larry, okay? Let's say janitor Jerry, everybody had heard, hey, they're killing Superman. These people popped into Midtown Comics, to Golden Apple Comics, to Moondogs Comics, all across Chicago, New York, LA, every borough. People are like, hey, got one of those? I'd like to have one just for history's sake. Killing Superman was a big deal. He was the number one icon of the moment, of the time. Batman still hadn't completely taken over. He was knocking on that door. They were 1A, they were 1B, but Superman still carried so much weight within the actual system of comic books. And killing him and showing the blood on the insignia. I mean, great images, the opposite of when I started this entire, in the first part when we put the electric blue Superman, which was just a failed attempt to recapture this. Look, Superman looks different. Look, Superman marries Lois Lane. Not the same as we killed Superman. And they had gravestones and his Superman insignia flying off like it was caught in the wind on a stick with blood all over it. American flag imagery. It was brilliant. It was 1,000% brilliant. It was absolutely the case of desperation meeting, resulting in necessity, and that necessity creating overwhelming success. As a fan, again, I thought the job that Dan Jurgens and Brett Breeding and John Bogdanov and Jerry Ordway and everybody in between and all the involved parties, they just crushed it. It was so fun. And I remember I wanted to make sure that I had all the copies. And I did pop my head in the comic store that day when it came out in, I believe, November of 1992. And at that point, you can't imagine the amount of bubbly and cake and cupcakes and candy being served at DC. They turned the narrative around. DC killing Superman also set off what I believe is their best storyline ever. The Return of Superman, or The Rise of the Superman, or four other Supermen rise to take his place. All the while, we are waiting to see, how long will it be? Is Superman really dead? Will he return? A Funeral for a Friend was an event that followed. I mean, they were ready. They were prepared. They were well planned. It was incredibly well executed. It's probably one of the best events ever. I mean, I would put it up there with like Crisis on Infinite Earths. It was so highly executed. It is up there with Age of Apocalypse. I think it's slightly, I give the slight edge to Superman because killing him was only the beginning, and then the book really started to soar. I've also covered that when they did return him, it was, I'll be honest, it was probably a year too soon. They promised retailers that they would get the same sales. They'll be even better, they said. The sales reps told them, ask retailers. They were misled. They overordered. They ordered. It's so hard to even kind of embrace. They ordered almost as much of Death of. They ordered as many numbers for Return of Superman as they did of Death of, and that was a tough nut because the industry had slowed, and people suddenly had tons and tons of comics, and it is what every retailer, I heard them say over and over, returning is not the same as killing. Bringing back, being born isn't the same. Yes, killing implies blood and consequences and violence and sadness and sorrow and shock and awe, and Death of Superman had all of that. Return of Superman had none of that. But Death of Superman and the year that followed are some of the best Superman comics, best Superman drama you will ever hope to encounter. Encountering it real time was an absolute blast. It was an absolute, just electric experience. I'm a DC fan. I bought a lot of DC comics. I was happy to see that they had had a pulse. How did it affect things, Rob? Well, not only did it affect Superman, but it suddenly gave DC, like, hey, let's start killing people. A year later, they would break Batman's back. It had none of the impact that Death of Superman did, but they were trying. We are now going to damage and maim and harm. The DC heroes were all suddenly being hunted in pursuit of higher sales and greater success. And again, they were all diminishing returns in regards to Death of Superman. But it proved you can take an existing icon, you can take something that is putting people to sleep, shock it, and awe. Bring some shock and some awe with it, and the sales will follow. Lawyer Larry, janitor Jerry, and accountant Aaron, you know, Dr. Dan, everybody was getting off their subway, parking their car, going to their comic store at 6 o'clock because, again, sales late in the day on Death of Superman were at an all-time high. It was a book that just didn't stop selling for the entirety of the day that it had come out. I'm going to recount how great each of our Image Comics launches did in a later episode, but moving a million a day is different than moving, 3 million in one window. And that is because the curiosity, the news drove DC Today has killed Superman. You can find it. It's out there. The reporting was there. The lines were there. The interest was there. And more importantly, the money. And people were happy for DC. Retailers were happy. It was like, wow, this company is not going to get run over by Image Comics. They're going to stand up. They're going to fight. They're going to use their creativity, their ingenuity. And it worked. And like I said, it put DC and it definitely put Superman back on the top. And it opened the door for all of the dark futures that we're about to encounter, the dark futures for the DC catalog of characters that they were about to encounter, because it was just the beginning. Again, breaking Batman's back only occurs because they did Death of Superman and it worked so well. Look, Death of Superman deserves all the flowers. It was fantastic. It got so much success and it was such an incredible achievement, and it really did I think rejuvenate the competitive spirit from Image Comics humiliating them, knocking them out of the number two perch. I mean, they were publishing like 50 comics the month. We knocked them out with 7. That'll leave a mark, as Chris Farley said. That'll leave a mark. That's a black and blue bruise, maybe a cut, just shy of a sprain. It was damaging, and it sent off a panic. And that happened in the summer of 1992. So again, they immediately met. Started this planning, and by late fall of 1992, they landed this plane, and Death of Superman had impact, and it had shockwaves that I think are still being felt today. As some of those pages go to market, they fetch incredible money. It is still an event that people remember fondly. And it is a time and a place that they are excited by and excited to be associated with, and it stirs them. And it really, I mean, look, obviously events of Death of Superman found their way into the creation of Doomsday, which I haven't mentioned very often. Doomsday was the creature created in order to mete out the punishment and kill Superman. Doomsday, having appeared in Batman versus Superman, the de facto kind of semi-Man of Steel sequel, obviously the animated, the Bruce Timm produced and animated shows. I have the DVDs. I bought them, showed them to the kids when we'd have long drives. One of their favorite Superman storylines. I mean, it carried to other media. Obviously, we've met Doomsday again in film, courtesy Zack Snyder, battling with Ben Affleck and Gal Gadot's debut as Wonder Woman and Henry Cavill. The cartoons, the toys, Death of Superman is a moment. It is. We all know how it went down. We all saw the rise of Doomsday. Doomsday got his own multiple storylines. He is a door that they open and revisit often with great reasoning, because he's a great character, and it was a great solution to the problem that they had of being stale and being bypassed, and consumers deciding to elevate Marvel and Image as their top two companies, as opposed to Marvel and DC, which it had been for years. So it was the emergency ripcord, and it could not. I mean, it is the epitome, because they had to jump out of a plane. They had to do something. They had to resort to an emergency measure, and this was literally turned out to be the golden parachute that they needed all along. Death of Superman, all-time banger, All the Flowers, huge event, number 3 on our 9 controversies that shook the 90s. So a couple things I want to add about the Death of Superman before we wrap this up is a couple of looks at, again, how the media was covering it back then, and what a huge priority DC had put on getting this and having this giant media blast, very wisely, I might add. This is literally the playbook of how to, for lack of a better term, exploit, promote, market a giant event. There was a reporter for the Atlanta Journal, and they were the first to report on this in the mainstream media, because the journalist grabbed a copy of the previews catalog, except this wasn't, Diamond was called Previews, Capital City Distribution, their catalog was called Advanced Comics, and the cover of it shows a drawing by John Bogdanov of Superman and Doomsday fighting, and it says Doomsday for Superman across the headline, and it says The Death of Superman. And this was in stores probably September of 1992, and late August, early September, this journalist for the Atlanta Journal got caught wind of this, saw this in the catalog, and decided, oh my gosh, DC is going to release this. He contacted DC Comics, and they said, we are not ready to issue an official press release on the Death of Superman as yet. And the Atlanta Journal journalist said, well, I think that's maybe something that we can decide now that we're on to you. And they went ahead and they absolutely leaked before anybody knew. Only the hardcore comic book people in comic book in the comic book realm would have any idea that this was going on. So he leaked in his Atlanta journal on September 4th, 1992. They printed, Superman dead? It's up and away for Man of Steel as DC Comics prepares to kill him. The author is William S. McTiernan. He says an irresistible force is going to meet an immovable object come November. Something's got to give. Superman will meet his demise. And it says, the Man of Steel will die fighting to save the city of Metropolis from a super lunatic Doomsday, a new villain who is an escapee from a cosmic insane asylum. He said he contacted DC directly, and they spoke to Mike Carlin, who was the editor of DC Comics, and he said that the road to this will start arriving on store shelves this week in September, but the actual event doesn't happen until November. And in an interview Mr. Carlin confirms that Superman will die in issue 75 of his series. So again, caught DC off guard, and their response was, and wisely again, because they wanted desperately to have this. What I mentioned prior is they weren't prepared to get people alarmed. They wanted the news story about Superman to die to come out much closer to publication. They said the reason that they were caught off guard by the Atlanta Journal and wanting to run with this, they weren't ready to issue the release because they wanted something much closer to publication so that Dr. Dan and Lawyer Larry and all the common people who don't normally buy comic books would explode into comic stores that afternoon upon hearing or reading about the headline or the article. So the journalist who spoke with Carlin confirmed that they didn't want to get the news out to the widespread media yet, and in fact even asked the Atlanta Journal to hold the article until they were closer to publication, but the Atlanta Home Journal said no, and they went to press on September 4th, a good 2 months before. So a reporter who happened to be a comic book fan wrote a newspaper article that sparked national interest due to the fact that he was into the Advance Comics, which was Capital City, may they rest in peace, the second largest distributor at the time. That was the cover of their order catalog. And so this guy immediately went out. So it says, DC definitely wanted to set, you know, to create a media event, but they wanted to hold it much closer. So when this first leaked, they just had to roll with the punches. But again, DC was trying to manage it from very, very early. And the funny thing is they use a John Byrne Man of Steel illustration in the Atlanta Journal when they announced on September 4th, 1992, that Superman would be dying. Now, again, speaking of Superman, of course, it goes without saying, it was the number one book in November of 1992, and number two was Pitt, number one. Can you believe that? Old Dale Keown was right there. The first appearance of Pitt is in Youngblood number four in a backup story that I paid Dale. He would not leave Marvel Comics. And then I said, what if I pay you $10,000 for a short story in the back of Youngblood? It happened. It worked. That sparked his interest. Pitt was born. X-Men is number three. Bloodshot, yes, your favorite Vin Diesel vehicle was number four, and Uncanny X-Men was number five. Marvel, again, they were never really in a whole lot of peril due to Image Comics. Image Comics, number 10 is Spawn. So that was the second book that was out. X-Force is number five. X-Factor, number six. And Spawn 10, then let's see, we get, oh man, Strife. My boy Strife was a top 12 book. Wetworks number 2 was number 11. And then you can go from there and look and see how everything was selling and how everything was doing. But Superman 75, The Death of Superman, was a huge, huge deal. And the way the marketplace reported on it, because I'm going to tell you something, if you go and look for Death of Superman, go 1992, look at headlines, reporting, it's all been replaced by stuff that is maybe 10 years old from 2010, 2015, from the 30th year anniversary. All this stuff has been bumped so far on the Google engines that you've got to go. And I'm holding my copy of Wizard number 17, got Valiant characters on the cover. And it says the biggest news this month is the climax of the Death of Superman storyline in Superman 75. This is a huge victory for DC Comics as they have been slipping in the sales and popularity charts for months. So I told it to you on the podcast, but this is Wizard Magazine reporting this at the time, which of course, you know, I have tons of problems with Wizard, but thank God for these physical copies because this is under a market watch. They're literally just telling you what sold. They're just trying to give you the facts and the figures. And in this case, they serve a certain purpose because it's printed material from that time because these reports are very few and far between. So again, what I said earlier, they're going to tell you right now, topping the charts of Diamonds 100, this is a serious victory for DC Comics as they have been steadily slipping in sales and popularity charts for the past several months. So that was the way it was reported. Big victory lap. It said that by their best estimate, For every 100 copies of Amazing Spider-Man number 372, 540 copies of Superman number 75 were ordered. In order, we have a serious amount of copies floating out around there. Expect the price of the book to probably increase in the aftermarket, but there's no way it can last given the amount of copies of The Death of Superman. So they wanted to weigh in, of course, because of The Wizard, on the actual collectability of the comic as well as just the sales. It's almost like the news was coming too fast for everybody to keep up with, because the next month, the very next month, in Wizard 18, February 1993 cover date, reports on the death of Superman, and the Superman has a dollar sign in it, and they have a release. The best-selling non-premiere comic of all time is Superman number 75, according to Roger Fletcher, the director of marketing for Diamond Comic Distribution. So, again, the best-selling non-premiere, so non-number one, and it is the best-selling non-number one, non-launch issue ever. And they say it is about to be released again and again and again. The first printing will be a substantial reprint of the newsstand edition, as well as a trade paperback collecting the entire storyline. Leading up to Doomsday, and it lists all the comics that were leading up to Superman number 75. They said it's a total of 168 pages and has a brand new cover by John Bogdanov, and it will include the prelude to Funeral of a Friend, which I said is just an incredible incredible storyline event that followed after Death of Superman. It was a big deal. And you should see, again, given the amount of reporting, it was heavily anticipated. It had a huge media push. And the bottom line, it was a lot of fun. It was great, but it achieved exactly what they said. It launched them back into the stratosphere. Don't believe me, but good luck finding some of these headlines. Google, the other thing is Return of Superman. This is something I found out when I was trying to Google Return of Superman. For years, in the early 2000s, you could find the articles about how many retailers got buried under ordering Return of Superman on par, if not equal to, Death of Superman, and what a tragedy it was. It was devastating. Because they tried to do it. DC tried to use their Warner Brothers arm and get the news out again that he was returning, but it just did not catch, because again, death is so, it's just so much more effective and has proven, you know, who shot JR, not who saved JR, who shot JR was the headline. So you can't find those anymore because of Superman Returns, the movie from, what is it, 2006, 2007, whichever was the Superman Returns with Kevin Spacey as Lex Luthor. I am seriously blanking. You guys fill in the blanks. Whenever that came out, that is now that when you go Return of Superman or Superman Returns, the movie just fills up the Google search. And trust me, I have dug and dug and dug. And these Death of Superman, the anniversary listings just take over the Google searches. You can try yourself. No matter how refined you get, it is it's difficult to get actual material like LA Times, New York Times. It's obtainable, but it is not simple by any means. So look, that's out. We did the Image partners leaving and the incredible footprint that the death of Superman left on the entirety of the 90s, and really kind of rejuvenated a publisher in DC Comics and showed them a new way. It's like they gave them a flashlight in a dark tunnel, and boy, They were going to go deeper and deeper into that tunnel with brighter, brighter lights and get all of the damages and the death and the consequences of their characters, because it moved the needle in the most significant way. Number one non-launch issue has a nice ring to it. Hey, everybody, this list is so big, you're going to have to come back and listen to part three, okay? Listen to part three of the nine controversies that shaped the 90s. It's just too damn big. I can't fit it all into two episodes or even one. So we're going three. Please come back again. Please catch it. I just very much enjoy going down this road for you. And if some of you are experiencing some of this news for the first time, what a great time to be looking at and enjoying all of the different offerings. I am just always so thrilled that you are along for the ride. You guys are just the best audience. Thank you for the word of mouth. Thank you for all the ways that you support this show. At the end of each and every episode, I jump on and I read the incredible, very generous reviews that you share in regards to this podcast. It is ridiculously humbling. I could not be more thrilled to read the generous words and enthusiasm that you and when you read this one, this person, Kimota, who gave us 5 stars and said, just found your podcast and loving it. This is a commitment. This is like a really nice review. It takes time, and I recognize that, and I appreciate it, and I want to read this to you. It says, this is from Komoda, just found your podcast and loving it. He generously gives us 5 stars. Rob, I grew up with your art and with your comics. What you and the team were doing to Form Image Comics made it to the East Coast during my formative comic book years. I recently found your podcast after a long hiatus from comic books, and it has rekindled my love and interest in comic books. I thought I knew a fraction of comics, but I am continually learning more and more about artists, writers, pencilers, inkers, feuds, you name it. I especially like your hidden gems segment and find them very insightful. All of this is coming at a time when my son is becoming a little person with his unique mannerisms, thoughts, feelings, and opinions. You know how it is. He artistically inclined and is learning to read, so this is perfect timing to begin laying the comic book foundation of his life, and he gives me a smiley emoji. We are reading comics, going to our local comic store, and ending each week by watching a comic book or comic book inspired movie after my wife and daughter go up to bed. He loves Spider-Man and Wolverine, of course. But last week when we were discussing what to watch, Deadpool was brought up, which prompted my wife to yell downstairs, "You two better not watch Deadpool." This brought about smirks on our faces. We both said in whispers to each other, "We're don't watching Deadpool." And I have been in trouble all week. LOL. A moment that was totally worth it and not possible without you, buddy. Thank you again for creating a fun and informative environment. Thank you, Kimota. Okay, signing with the sweet Miracle Man call sign. Okay, hey, you guys, this is the kind of stuff that just fills my soul, gives me the biggest smile. I love the communal sharing of comic books and comic book experiences, and that's what we do here. And thank you for digging it. Good luck on all of the fun. Wishing you all the best with your son as you guys experience all things comic book related, toys, video games, shows, movies. What a great time. Thank you again for that very generous review. When you leave a review, many of them come on the Apple platform. It helps us, in fact, elevate the show, gives us a better profile. Boy, I just got the numbers for the first part of this show. I literally I just got an email. Wow. You guys showed up for the 90s. Wow. Good thing I'm splitting this into 3 parts. If I wasn't already, I'd be doing it just for the ratings. Look, come back for part one, for the third part, which we get to our number one and our number two, the 9 controversies that shook, that shaped, that made the 90s, okay? And again, leave those reviews. I will read them at the end of each and every show. You guys, I'm going to make this quick. You can catch me on Twitter/X. At Robert Liefeld, R-O-B-E-R-T-L-I-E-F-E-L-D, blue check. It signifies I'm the real deal. I would love to talk to you and look at your mentions, replies, as I do every single day. Catch me on X at Robert Liefeld. On Instagram, I am at Rob Liefeld. Much more of a visual diary. A lot of new stuff, a lot of exciting news coming your way. I'll share it probably first and foremost on Instagram. I am on Instagram at Rob Liefeld, R-O-B-L-I-E-F-E-L-D. Another blue check signifies it is really me and not an imposter. On Instagram at Robert Liefeld. We have a group on Facebook. Please come join us. It's called Rob Liefeld, Marvel, Extreme, and Beyond. And we would love for you to join us. It is such a fun group. Great bunch of people. Only positive vibes. We have art contests. My co-moderator, co-administrator, he might be one of them. He might be the name that clicks you on through. His name is Terry Sala, S-A-L-A. He helps run the group with me. He does these great art contests. Everybody votes by, the winner is determined by our votes and polling. So, but we're always sharing cool stuff, cool comics. Rob Liefeld, Marvel, Extreme, and Beyond, join us. So much of what we talk about here is continued in long form. I post every podcast there for us to have a longer discussion. So Rob Liefeld, Marvel, Extreme, and Beyond is a group, not a page, a group. Search it, find it. We will click you on through. You guys, get the Whatnot app. It is a killer app. Why? Because you'll find me on the other end of it likely twice a week. Sharing exclusive, and I have so many of them and so many to come, and so many of the best that you have never experienced yet are coming. You're going to get a preview of that on my Instagram page very soon. Exclusive Deadpool comics, Spider-Man comics, New Mutants comics, X-Force comics, Prophet comics, Evangeline comics, Last Blood, a brand new comic book that I am writing and drawing and inking and having the best colors in the world bring it to life in beautiful color. We have manga editions as well that are customized black and white gradients, tones, speed lines, really great stuff. Last Blood is a book you can only get from me. 28 brand new pages written and drawn by me on my Whatnot platform. Get Whatnot, follow Rob Liefeld. You'll be alerted when I go live. It is me looking right into the into the live stream, making an absolute fool of myself as I share all of the stuff that we have. Remarks, custom signatures, signed pops, toys, all of it. Check me out. I look forward to seeing you there on Whatnot. Follow me, Rob Liefeld. Right now, I have a in-person signature series event planned at CGC. I will sign your books. You send them to CGC. Go to the CGC website, CGC, look up the Rob Liefeld in-person signing and look at the menu and follow the instructions and get your books in. We're going to get those books signed before the Deadpool 3, Deadpool Wolverine premiere so that you can get them back in time for that premiere. The deadline is May. I'll likely be signing them in June. And hopefully, because Deadpool Wolverine arrives the last week, July 27th. It's late in July. So we are trying to get these into your hands. Get them to me. Get them to CGC. I did the first ever in-house signing with them last fall. It was a blast. We moved thousands of your books, and they came back in such amazing grades. You guys were all sharing with me all the high grades, all the great conditions. We took such good care. There are so many people feeding the books, pulling the books, packing the books. This is just such a fun experience. I hope that you can be a part of this second ever signing that I'm doing over at CGC. At the end of each and every show, I just want to give you a big internet hug. I just want to tell you, I'm wishing you all the best. I hope that your physical, emotional, spiritual, and mental state of mind is in the best possible place. I mentioned earlier, we never had discussions of mental health, not like we do now. Maybe back in 1996, I'd have been, guys, you're driving me nuts. I have mental health issues with Image Comics, but please get off the grind. That's what it takes. Step away, release, go get some time for yourself. Maybe you can't go on a big vacation, a big rejuvenation vacation right now, but that one day, those few hours, that half day, read a book. My wife, she burns through books and novels. She consumes. It's a way that she gets away from the grind. Hey, we got three adult kids. We got adulting issues. You know, we've been married 29 years. We got all sorts of stuff, burdens, just like the stuff that plagues you each and every day. Okay, I got deadlines. I got all sorts of crazy stuff, but we find time, watch a show together, have a great meal, consume amazing food, desserts, candy, Reese's, big cups. There you go. There it is. Someone just send me, you know who you are. You know who you are, Scoop Flow. You sent me Reese's with bananas, hard pass. They finally put something associated with Reese's that I will not participate, but I'm so glad it exists for all of you. And hey, maybe for you, that 90 seconds absorbing that candy bar or that dessert, that 2-3 minutes that's going to take you to eat that dessert. I've been with my friends. We go to Ghirardelli's at San Diego. I see how fast we all inhale our Sundays, okay? You don't eat those slow, you eat them fast because it feels good and you want to inhale that good feeling and whoa, then you're rejuvenated. Maybe it's a book, maybe it's a comic, maybe it's a movie, maybe it's a great date night, maybe it's a great time with your friends. A couple of friends of ours had to cancel. The wife got sick and we were lucky to replace my friend and his wife, our two good friends, with my son and my daughter who was in town. And it was phenomenal. It was exactly as it was intended to be. Instead of, my wife said, don't cancel. Because I was immediately going to cancel when they said, hey, we can't go tonight. So-and-so woke up sick. We replaced them with our kids. And I'm telling you, our hearts soared. We had the best time catching up with my 20-year-old daughter and my 21-year-old son. And it was exactly like my wife and I, literally, we were walking a little higher the rest of the weekend. It was such a blast. And yes, a week later, we rebooked. This has all happened in like the last, 13 days. We rebooked with our friends and we caught up and we did that date night as scheduled on a delay. But hey, get away, get off the grind. The grind can only go so far. You got to get off. You got to sit down, get in a recliner, a luxury chair, a beanbag, whatever floats your boat. And maybe you have a boat. Take the boat out in the harbor, open it up. Miami, Arizona, Utah, the lakes, Southern California, whatever it takes, have that wind blowing through your hair, your hat, your sunglasses on, and just get back at it rejuvenated. I am pulling for you, fist bump right through this mic, hug right through this digital platform. Take good care of yourself. That is my wish for you. And thank you so much for listening to the show. Do not leave me. We have another part. We have one last part to go. Don't leave me hanging. Come back. I'll be here. We absolutely, most definitely, and drum roll please, most definitely, inevitably, we'll talk again real soon.
We'll be right back.